This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 12, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The item number 2 is Draft Advisory Opinion 2014-20, a discussion of Make Your Laws PAC, Inc. However, at the request of the requester. Oh, you're ready? Oh, okay. All right. Then please come forward. Sai from President and Treasurer of Make Your Laws PAC.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
Likewise.
Thank you.
And if I may correct one error that I made during the discussion of the Bitcoin AI, I want to give my thanks to Jessica Zonkoff, Bob Knopp, Theo Lutz, and Rachel Provencher, who were very much helpful in this AO and the Bitcoin AO, which was quite complex. And I think Bob Knopp and Jessica Zonkoff deserve special credit for that one, for all their feedback.
Thank you. We really appreciate that. And for those of you who aren't aware, Sai was here yesterday at the hearing and again here today, but we appreciate it. It certainly was complex, and we also give them a lot of credit for all the work they've done. So thank you very much. With regard to this matter, I understand that there was an additional comment that was submitted yesterday, and I would like to, we have here, let's see.
I can summarize it briefly if you like.
Your comment. Well, let me move first to the Office of General Counsel, and we have with us Rachel Provencher and Amy Rothstein of the Office of General Counsel. And Rachel, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Ravel, and good morning, commissioners. Would you like for me to discuss the comment?
I would appreciate a discussion of the comment to begin with, to see whether or not there's some concern about us discussing the matter today.
Yep. The requester has posed a question that is potentially complicated, and OGC would need some more time to look into the matter before advising the commission.
Okay, so you think that additional question is going to require us to have additional time. Sir, given that fact, we would need for you to agree to an extension of time, given
An extension is no problem.
Okay.
I think there are some differences between the two drafts as it is that we could discuss today that I don't think are particularly affected by the clarifications we raise, but no problem.
If what's the will of the commission, would you like to have a discussion on the two drafts, Mr. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that having a presentation from counsel and a brief discussion would not be a problem, and it sounds like we will need to have a little bit more thinking go into it, so we couldn't reach a decision today. But
that's perfectly
fine. I don't think there's any harm in kicking that off.
Okay, and especially since you're here today.
I unfortunately won't be able to attend in person
in the next meeting. Well, then, absolutely. So, Ms. Provencher, could you go forward with your presentation?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Chair Ravel, and good morning again, commissioners. Agenda documents 15-10-A and 15-10-B contain two draft responses to an advisory opinion request by Make Your Laws PAC. Make Your Laws PAC is a political committee that asks whether it may accept the assignment of intellectual property resulting from unpaid volunteer services performed by foreign nationals. Both drafts conclude that the requester may accept uncompensated services from foreign national volunteers because the proposed act is a volunteer service and the commission has consistently applied the volunteer services exception to foreign national volunteers. The drafts differ, however, in that draft A considers whether coding a website is a permissible activity under commission regulations for volunteer service, internet services, and equipment usage. Draft B also supersedes a 1981 advisory opinion in which the Commission concluded that a foreign national artist was prohibited from creating an original piece of artwork for a committee's use and fundraising. The Commission received no comments on the request and received one comment from the requester on the drafts. Additionally, if the Commission approves a response, we request authority to make technical and conforming changes.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by the commissioners of council? Vice Chair.
I would just, this comment came in a little bit late, so I was, especially after yesterday's hearing, which had taken a lot of maybe of our mental and maybe even physical energy. I had not had a chance to focus on the comment to the extent that I would have liked. Perhaps you could just explain
certainly
kind of your perspective and your comments back from us regarding the two drafts.
Absolutely. I submitted the comments 2 days ago, but I forgot to copy it to AO at FEC. So my apologies for that.
No
The comment that I submitted previously was fairly simple. It just addresses a couple issues raised in one in both of the drafts and one in draft A that were unclear in our request. Both of the drafts at page 3, I think, footnote 4, say that they are not addressing the applicability of new 52 U.S. Code 30121A1A, where it applies to non-federal activity. We were not clear in the request that we do intend to engage in non-federal activity, and so if we're going to use the same logo and so forth, we need to use it everywhere.
Okay.
Draft A also wasn't clear entirely on whether we would be using the same IP offline, and we do intend to do so, of course. We operate mainly online, but you know, we may be doing mailings or TV or whatever else, and if we're to have IP, it kind of needs to be wholly in the clear that we own it, we can use it wherever, we're allowed to use whatever, so that it doesn't encumber future use, because we wouldn't be able to accept services that basically taint some part of our code or our logos or whatever from use somewhere else. That said, that doesn't affect the differences between the two drafts. As between the two drafts, I think there's sort of two issues. 1981-51 is an AO. I haven't seen the actual request, just the opinion. But my understanding is that an artist wanted to make some actual, like, physical paintings for a committee, give them to the committee, and the committee would then reproduce them and sell them or something like that. I should also say we have no opinion per se on a policy matter of foreign nationals whatsoever, just if they're going to be contributing services, we need to be able to have the IP. With regard to that, I guess I would make the analogy to the Elton John, Hillary Clinton murrh, where suppose Elton John were a performance painter and all other facts were the same, and the committee flew him over, they paid for his brushes and ink and canvas and whatnot, and all he did was paint the thing. Would they own the resulting object? That is perhaps implied in whether the commission wants to overturn that AO. It's not implied in our request necessarily, but it may be a consideration. We have no particular opinion on which way that should go, though I would point out that there's not that much difference between someone using the committee's resources to make a painting, and that's all in the clear, or they're using, you know, their own equipment that they use normally for all other things. It's not any special thing. And them doing basically the same thing in Photoshop. You know, it's a painting either way. I don't see that big of a difference, as long as the committee pays for anything that's particular to that. I guess perhaps a more similar analogy in the Elton John one is, suppose that Hillary Clinton's campaign had recorded the concert, paid for the recording, and was assigned the IP in that recording, and then like sold an album. That's perhaps more analogous, because then you would just be talking about, you know, the intellectual property rights and the right to reuse that. As regarding the internet usage thing, we do intend to have all the services that are made to be made online. I'm not particularly expecting to have someone like come in and paint a gouache for us or whatever that was in 1981. So all the services I do expect to be performed online, but of course they would be used offline. And I do think that if a third party paid a coder to code for us, then that would be a contribution from the third party to us. And I think the key thing, of course, is the fact that it's a volunteer service where the volunteer is not expending any particular funds to make the service. They're not contributing something of value. They might be using their laptop or whatever that they normally have, but they're not being compensated for it, unusually. And I guess that's where I would draw the distinction. It's not exactly along the same lines as the difference between the two drafts in our preference. Naturally, I think that the fact that we're open source does contribute significantly to the fact that it really should be exempt. It's provided for free. It's freely collaborative online. And I think that does squarely fall within the volunteer internet activity exemption. If someone's coding or if someone is commenting online, to be honest, text is text. And if they're doing it for free and no one's paying them to do it, that's exempt. So I guess that's my only comments on the difference between these two drafts. And the comments that we submitted, we'd just like to make sure it's protected so that we can use it in state or local activity, and we can use it if we like print out a flyer and mail it to people or whatever else we do with it. We can't have a logo or code or whatnot that's tainted in some way that we can't use for all our activities.
Thanks for that clarification. And it sounds like with the additional issues that have been raised, that our Office of General Counsel is going to take a closer look at that, and we'll be able to address this next time.
Okay. Are there, Commissioner Weintraub?
I just wanted to float an additional issue, and happy to hear any comments that you have on it. But one thing that's been troubling me is the notion of distinguishing between tangible and intangible intellectual property versus, you know, a physical thing. I mean, as you know, intellectual property has real value. You know, the logo on the back of my phone, that's a really valuable thing to the folks that own the rights to that. You know, the Nike Swish, you know, you can come up with any number of examples of really valuable. Yeah, that's what they call it. Swoosh. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Swoosh. My apologies. Apologies to Nike.
So embarrassing.
I'm sure that's a
trademark. You're maligning
as well.
Their trademark.
All right. I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to. Swoosh. Sorry. These things have real value. People litigate over them. People,
oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, you know. You know, if you try and use any of the Disney characters in something, you know, Disney will come after you. I mean, the fact that it's not necessarily a physical thing, the intellectual property rights are still something that is very valuable. So I have some concerns about drawing this distinction and saying, well, because it's intangible, we don't have to worry about that as a property right that's being conveyed here. So I'm not I'm not sure that I'm satisfied with actually either draft, because it really, and to go to your example, I think there might be a distinction between a concert performance and conveying the rights to sell the album, because I'm not sure there are intellectual property rights in the performance at the time of the performance, as opposed to capturing it on a DVD or something, on a CD, and reproducing it and selling it. So I'd be, and how that interacts with the open source. I mean, maybe some of this is because it's open source. The value of it is that it's free. It's free to everybody. So maybe that's not a problem. I'm not sure if that captures the logo, the value of the logo, though. What I've been thinking about is an analysis that would, in order to be most faithful to our previous line of authorities, that would continue to exempt the volunteer services of the foreign nationals, but to the extent that there are property rights conveyed, I think perhaps some compensation might need to be made for that. And, I don't know what your logo probably wouldn't be worth quite as much as the Nike swoosh.
I rather doubt that.
it might not involve an inordinate payment, but in my view, I think perhaps some payment would have to be made for the property rights themselves. But I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on that.
Certainly. I think your point is well made. I would not contest that intellectual property has value, and I am no IP lawyer, so I won't comment on whether a live performance has IP rights. I do not know the answer to that question.
Neither do I.
However, I would point out a few distinctions. I'm pretty sure that whoever designed that Apple logo got compensated.
One would hope.
Its value derives from the fact that it's used commercially. By definition, we are non-commercial. We are a nonprofit organization. None of the stuff we do is commercial. Secondly, I would say that I made the analogies for the Elton John recording. They're not perfect analogies. I made them just as ways that the commission could perhaps grapple with the question between the two drafts of this 1981-51 AO and whether to override that. I don't think that the commission would need to decide that, say, a recording of Elton John's concert has to be permissible to approve our AO. I would say that they're distinguishable in a fairly simple way, which is that the services rendered that we're requesting, in order for us to use the service per se, it's sort of inextricably bound up with the IP in the service. If someone designs a logo for us, it would be very irresponsible for us to not take the copyright in that logo, so that we can enforce copyright, trademark, so that we can say, look, this is our TV ad or whatever. I think it, in order for us to use the service, and the service is clearly permissible, we must have also the IP to that service. And that's not necessarily the case for the service in creating an album, for instance. So there's a distinguishability there.
But couldn't the painter say the same thing? In order for me to donate my services as a painter, they've got to be able to use the painting.
Yes, and if someone is designing a logo for us, they are painting, I guess, in Photoshop. So I think to that extent, yes. though there's a distinction to be made between we're not selling our logo, obviously. We're not going to be selling reproductions of, you know, some painting. It's possible we might sell shirts.
But Apple doesn't sell the logo itself. It sells things that have the logo on it.
And we may sell shirts with our logo on it. And I think that would be clearly permissible. I think there might be a distinction where, you know, our logo is so sort of part of the activity of the committee. It's sort of part of the identity of the committee. There's a difference between that and, you know, if Elton John were to record an album for us, not likely, but and then selling that's not really like an integral part of our operations. It would be a separate kind of thing. And I think there could be a distinguishing factor made there between something that's sort of intrinsic to the operations of the committee and something that is sort of this external thing that's contributed, that's being contributed for the purpose of sale, basically. None of the things that we have asked about would be contributed for the purposes of sale. They're just part of our operations. Commissioner Weintraub, you also mentioned the fact that we're open source. I do think that is a significant factor. Anyone is free other than logos. Obviously, we need to protect trademark. But anyone can look at our source code on GitHub. It's up there right now. Anyone can copy it, and anyone can use it if they want, if they abide by the open source license that we have. In order to enforce that license, we need to own all the copyright in that work, because there are limits. It's a fairly generous license, but it's not complete. I think that does make a distinction between, you know, we're not taking something just to sell a lot of it. We're taking it to operate, to run our website, which is one of the things that's specifically mentioned, I think, in draft A as, you know, part of the explicitly sort of exempt parts. It's, you know, we just want to run an open source website, and it's a practical matter for us. We're not looking to make a lot of money selling CDs.
No, I get that, but I don't think that solves the problem, because if a foreign national wanted to donate furniture for your office and you said, well, I'm not going to be selling any of this furniture, I'm just going to use it in my operations, it would clearly be prohibited.
Right. Yeah, that's an in-kind contribution.
Right, exactly. So that's my point. The fact that you are using it in your operations, that's not the distinguishing factor, I think.
Agreed. To the extent that we would be talking about in-kind contributions, obviously not. You know, virtually all in-kind contributions probably are part of operations. But if we're talking about just IP, you know, there's... Are we accepting it so that we can make money off of it? No. We're accepting it so that we can run our website, so that we can maintain the code, so that we can have a logo that we can use wherever, so that, you know, maybe we can improve the copy on.
I hear what you're saying. I'm not that part of the argument is not persuasive to me, that you're just using it in your operations. The fact that it's somehow intrinsically linked with the provision of the services itself, I think that is something that I have been thinking about, and I will continue to think about, since we're not going to vote on it today. But I think that may be a more persuasive argument to me.
I mean, that is sort of the reason that we brought this request, is someone can perform these services. I think that's uncontested. But practically speaking, for me to authorize us using those services, the result of those services on our website, we have to own the IP.
And even for the coding, because I don't know enough about open source or about coding to really know this. But even though it's open source, it still requires a license?
Open source, so there, open source refers to sort of two different things. Open source per se just means that the source is open to inspection. And that is true. If you go to github.com/makeyourlaws, you will see all of our source code. And anyone can look at it. Now, we could say you can look at it, but you can't take it. So it would be open source, but not open license. And there's some stuff that's not in that repository, which relates to security or NDA or whatever. Then there's also open license, which we also do have. We use two licenses. One is the MIT license, and one is the Afro GNU public license. They both basically have the commonality that you can reuse any of the stuff that's licensed, which is basically everything except for our trademark-related bits, so long as you, in turn, share that code and any improvements you make to it under the same terms. And the Afro license differs from the general GNU public license or GPL, only that it applies to if you're running it on your server or something as opposed to distributing it through CDs. It's just sort of a technicality of when you have to apply it. But basically, if you want to use our code, you can, but then you have to have your version's open license under the same terms as well and share your improvements, and then we get to use your improvements as well.
Okay, but there's no payment for use?
No, it is free.
Okay.
If you operate within the license.
Thanks.
Commissioner Walther, do you have a question?
Just a little bit on that exactly. The open source is an important factor, it seems to me, but I don't really understand, what all that means, because open source sounds to me, well, anybody can use it, so this makes this decision a lot easier, but is you get a peep at what it's all about, and then you can't do anything with it without then going back to you and getting a license to use it, and then maybe would you pay them for the license to use it at that point?
Not quite.
For one thing, is it just giving them the knowledge, okay, that's open source too, but then giving them the ability to use it, change it, sell it, then how's that work?
Yeah, so that's
your system.
The second part is the open source license. So giving them the knowledge is just putting it out there, and you can say, here, look, this is the code we're running. The license is a preemptive license to anyone who wants to use it, freely available. If you comply with the terms of the license, you can use the code. If you want to use the code outside of the terms of the license, then you would have to negotiate something. But if you're within the terms of the license, then that just means you share whatever improvements you make equally under the same terms. There's no payment at all, and you don't have to ask permission. Even it's preemptively allowed.
Okay, so if somebody has the source code and that's code A, mm-hmm. and then they embellish it and improve it, and it's say call it the approved one B.
Then they have to share that just the way we did.
And then can they sell B?
They can sell it, but it would be hard to sell something that other people can use for free. They cannot sell a license to it.
So if they embellish it and that has a lot of value because it makes it a lot better,
they must share their improvements for free under the same terms. They can sell like CDs of it. Various Linux distributions do so, and they're all open source, open license. That's sort of the whole point is of a what's called a copyleft sort of licensing scheme. Is on the one hand, it's free to use, and you can reuse it if you want, but the catch is, if you improve it, you gotta share your improvements just like we shared ours.
Okay. Commissioner?
Not at this time.
Okay. Any other questions?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Cy. That was really very helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we will continue it till, well, or you'll just talk to them about, okay. We'll figure out what you need to do enough to process it. And I do want to mention that this week is Rachel Provenzer's last week at the commission. She was a presidential management fellow, and I had the pleasure of getting to know you. And we really appreciate all the work that you've done for the commission. It's been great to have you. I know you are passionate about campaign finance law, so we hope to see you again, either before us or with us at some point. But thank you very much for all your work, and we appreciate you working on this issue as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And all right. I would request to appear at any future meeting on this remotely and have some time to view a few future drafts so that we can submit any comments.
And we appreciate that. We are all very glad to actually see you in the flesh, though.
As am I. Thank you.
All right. The next, excuse me,